Uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
Edition of the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us here tonight for another late night Moonbat edition of the broadcast. And, you know, it's, I honestly don't have enough, really, I don't have very much material at all. Really not even enough material for a show at all today. I just said, fuck it. You know, I'll get up here and wing it and see what happens. There's like really very little material, very little to get into. And I really didn't know what to do other than, you know, just get up here and see what happens. So we'll do that. We'll definitely be doing more reading out of The End of Days by Zachariah Sitchin, our continued series of reading. And we shall be getting into all that and throwing it all down for you here tonight, live on the Global Reality, right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. So that's why I was playing more tunes and continuing it out. Bear with me here for the next few days or so. I'm just, like I said, I just got this new preamp, so I'm toying around with stuff and trying to get some sound. I noticed that it's been sounding distorted over the past couple of days. And I noticed last night that I had, what it was I had the volume up too high out of the preamp. And then I had the headphones down, and I turned the headphones up and you could hear the distortion. So now, that may have caused the vocals, my voice to be lower on the stream. I don't know. Maybe you guys can tell me, is it sounding okay in there, chat room? Am I coming through loud and clear for you on the airwaves tonight? Please let me know. My website where this broadcast originates from is theglobalreality.com. That is theglobalreality.com. Let me try a different preamp setting there. Now it produces more noise, but it sounds like it's may have gotten a little better. It's kind of a sophisticated preamp, so I'm sort of still getting used to it and learning all the ropes here of it, everything that it does. Sounds good. All right. As long as it sounds good, then we'll go with it. Then I just noticed that, still a little gainy. Still, yeah. it's not OCD. It's just that it's a sophisticated piece of equipment. It's not, the other ones had, you plug it right in and it's a tube preamp. You plug it right in and it's got two knobs, volume and gain, and that's it. This one is... it's a little bit more sophisticated. It's an actual console. Think a little gainy. Okay, let's try that. Let's try something different here. How's that? Well, I don't know. We'll go with it and see what happens. As long as you guys can hear me okay, I guess that's all that really That's all that really matters. It's clear, but your mic volume was lower. Yeah, the it was lower or is lower? I guess that's one. Because to me, it looks like it's lower now than it was last night. Because the last night was like, I mean, I could see the VU meter on the stream. I could see where it's hitting. And last night was hitting up pretty high, you know, almost pretty much redlining. Now it's not even getting anywhere near the red line. It's not even get to the yellow line. So I don't know if I change something or need to change something or there we go. Let's try that a little bit. Turn these up. Turn the other one down. Don't listen to me. My speakers are trashed. Okay, well then, why are you offering your opinion if you have trash speakers? Goodness. Anyway, we'll go with it. I don't hear as much distortion. Oh, see, now I'm starting to hear some distortion. See, I don't want the distortion there. I want to be clear. So I guess if there's less gain or something like that, I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, from now on out, if you're going to give somebody advice for high-end, you know, sound equipment, make sure you're not running off some whole fucking, all right, well, nobody's bitching, right? Nobody's bitching about the sound. It sounds decent, right? Was it distorted? It's not distorted. Because I did notice, so when I checked the archives, the sound was a little distorted, but, yeah. Anybody with a half-ass decent pair of speakers, give me an opinion. How about that? I think from now on, that's what I'll say. If you have speakers for your computer that were made before 1999, please do not give me your opinion on equipment. That's hilarious. Anyway. I'm going to continue on here. I gotta be honest. It's better now, whatever I did. Okay. Yeah. I rolled up on the preamp a little bit. I mean, on the mixer a little bit, and I've got it like fucking jammed out max on the, Sam broadcaster too. So, but there we go. I want to get it sounding good. I mean, it's a good preamp and it's just whenever you get a new piece of gear, you got to toy with it. You got to see what sounds best. You got to work with some stuff. So I've been going back because I don't ever listen to my own archives. But the past couple of nights, I was like, yeah, it sounds good, but it just sounded like it was too much distortion. Oh, it sounds okay. Yeah, well, is that okay or could sound better? Come on here. Throw me a bone here, John. What is, you got to define okay. Okay is okay means good to go, or okay means it sounds okay. It sound better. Which one is it? okay. All right. My headphones are decent and you're clear enough that I can hear your cat stalking outside of your studio. You know, you probably can because he's not in here right now. Christ, man, Hydra, you need to get... Jesus, man, what the fuck kind of headphones you got? I think you need to, like, give those to Dr. Dre so he can, you know, make some new Beats headphones out of them or something. Christ, you listening on fucking subatomic cans or something? Jesus, fuck kind of tech you got? Oh, man. Yeah, it's always fun, isn't it? Yeah, we, I would love to have emails tonight. If you guys have anything you'd like to hear me discuss, if you have questions, love to have those tonight. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. That's GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. I love having fun with the chat room too. people are already like, come on. I really don't have a lot of info to talk about tonight, so I'm just having fun right now. You know what I mean? Bear with me here. I mean, you're lucky I'm even doing a show at all. I almost didn't even do Come On Live tonight because I absolutely have nothing to talk about. So we're beta testing the preamp right now. Oh, man. You're right on. Okay, cool. I appreciate that, chat room. Thank you guys for giving me the info and letting me know. And also MJ, who sent an email and says he's got, he's running like studio gear. And he said it sounds fucking great. So, all right. Thank you so much, everybody out there. But yeah, I'd love to have emails tonight. If you guys are out there listening live and you want to have some, something to say or something for me to talk about or question, love to have that. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. The final installment, the last segment, the last hour, I should say, the real hardcore shit on Jones and the red and Khashoggi and all that and the Cigarette 2, it is now on YouTube. So go and get it. The entire film, Cigarette 2, is out there for free now. You can go out there and get it, and it's in three parts on YouTube, and you can watch it at your heart's desire. So please go and do so. Those of you who are still waiting on discs, be patient. Those will be arriving to you very soon. And just because it's on, I've put it out for free now, doesn't mean I want there to, the DVDs and Blu-ray sales to stop. We still have one. We still got discs to sell, but just everything that's been going on lately and the stage that the elections have reached and the degree of the continuing psychological operations of Alex Jones and the phony patriot movement, the whole deal, I just felt it was time to go ahead and let it rip and get it out there. I've waited long enough, and I've had enough time for people to get the DVDs and stuff like that. But yeah, go and get it if you want it, and that's how you can support our work as well that way. So we continue making more films. Thanks to everybody out there who continues to support our work and what we do. I'm just blown away by the support that we continue to have as far as people, spreading the word about the show. And, even if you only donate a little bit, believe me, that helps. If you donate a whole lot, that helps too. But everybody out there, just want to have a collective thank you to everybody for continuing to help me push on with this and help me continue to get this work done. And I wouldn't be sacrificing my entire life to do this if I didn't feel it was worthwhile. And those of you who donate and support our work wouldn't be sacrificing the money that you do if you didn't know this was important and worthwhile either. So collectively, I think we all need to pat ourselves on the back for, I'm working hard, you're working hard to make sure that I can continue working hard. And all around, high fives on that one, because it's just everything becomes even more interesting when you have everybody contributing something, whether it's financial support or information or whatever, or people that could donate their time to run the website, stuff like Manhydra does, whoever, whatever it may be, that's fantastic. And I really just have been blown away by everybody's contributions lately with the research and links and everything. And please continue to send me, stuff when you're researching. Because again, as I talked about last night, people always find stuff I didn't find. We got into the conversation about the gin last night. And that's definitely an element of all this that, I was started talking about that stuff 2008, 2009. I was talking about how everybody is, I'm sorry, I just got distracted because an email popped up on my thing. It just makes so much sense. I was blown away by that thing with Oliver Stone's son talking about that, because that's absolutely demon conjuring and demon controlling, and it goes back to the Hermetic Seal of Solomon. It's not a pentagram. John sent me another email and he said, it's something about the pentagram ring. It's not a pentagram ring. It's not a Star of David ring. It's called the Hermetic Seal of Solomon. That's the technical name for it. And yes, that's how you control the entities. And so, when you look at the fact that the Iraq National Museum, the first place they went in when they invaded, I mean, think about that, folks. They sold us this lie of 9/11. Then they made us believe that Saddam Hussein was involved. We get behind the invasion. The first thing they do is they go in and they take all the antiquities, including the reptilian statues, which from what I understand are the djinn. And it's funny that they went in there and you see them open up and there's all those, the djinn bottles in there. And there is some kind of tie-in between like the Anunnaki and the Djinn. It's like the Djinn were like the were entities, and some people believe they actually exist. A lot of the phenomenon. Well, here's a synopsis for a book on the subject, and I've looked at this book. I don't know anything about the person who wrote it, so it could be bullshit. But I mean, there were things I read about seemed good, so I may try to get a copy of this and maybe interview somebody. But it's called the Vengeful Djinn, and it says, if you fear one thing in your life, fear the Djinn. An ancient Arabian legend says that God made humans from mud and clay, angels from light, and Djinn from smokeless fire. In the Western world, many people readily accept the idea of angels and demons, but most have no knowledge of the Djinn, called God's other people. According to legend, the Djinn were the first inhabitants of this world, where they lived for thousands of years before humanity arrived. In order to make room for humans, angels took the Djinn out of this world and placed them in a dimension that parallels our own. And they stay hidden from our view. That would make a lot of sense. They have the ability to see and interact with us, but we have difficulty seeing them. They are cloaked in mystery, and it suits their covert purpose. And I think the Djinn is also where the shape-shifting thing and the reptilian thing comes from, and why we see these depictions of these animal-like creatures. I mean, the Temple of Hathor at Dendera in Egypt, you see that, with the snakes coming out with, you know, right next to pictorials of, you know, giants next to smaller humans working, to the stuff from the Sumerian bas reliefs and stuff that you see, the different animal-looking things. From what I've been reading up on, that's what these Djinn can do. They can take on the forms of like animals, of animal creatures. And, the fact that they found all those Djinn bottles inside when they cracked open the Iraq National Museum vault and took all the antiquities, including those reptilian statues, it just makes me wonder. Because I didn't know that before, I mean, I think there's absolutely a connection to that. And, look, these guys are, they are channelers. They are communicating and have been forever with spiritual entities. And I believe that scenario that I've described for them having this technology to recreate human bodies and physical plane bodies, but they can't get souls to inhabit it, and that being a Trojan horse for these evil entities to inhabit, I think that's what the Djinn have done. I think that they've been around for so long, they've just waited and bided their time for us to create the technology, for the technology to advance to a level in which they can actually inhabit robotic bodies or whatever it may be. The goal of most Djinn is to retake this world, which they feel rightfully belongs to them. In order to succeed, they must make humanity give up a stewardship of this reality. They are accomplishing this by stealth and disguise. They have a great powers and plenty of time, for they live for centuries. Shape-shifting Djinn may be responsible for many forms of paranormal phenomenon and experience, such as UFOs, shadow people, ghosts, poltergeists, and demonic possession. In such ways, they gain access to us that enables them to steal our life force and information about us, and to manipulate and use us without revealing their true form and purpose. These negative experiences are on the rise. And here's from another website that I found. Known as genies in English, Djinn, singular form of Djinni, have deep roots in Arab culture. The Djinn first sprang from stories told by Indian, Persian, and Arabian storytellers and gained international fame when they appeared throughout the tales of Scheherazade told in the 1001 Nights. It is said that the Djinn are created from fire and can take on any form they choose, animal or human, and can be of any size. They have a human-like form which can take the shape of animals, but only temporary, unless it is their tribe's animal protector. Most of them are hostile, though some can be friendly. It is possible for magicians or wise men and women to gain power over a Djinn and use it to perform amazing and magical tasks. Right, that's exactly what King Solomon did, and that's what I believe the elite of today are still doing. Be wary, for even a friendly Dijin is unpredictable, and certainly anyone who breaks an agreement with the Dijin will strongly regret it. Often Dijin take naughty pleasure in punishing people for wronging them, even unintentionally. There are five different types of Dijin. The least powerful is the Jan. Next come the Dijin, and then the Shaitans, or devils. The Afrits, sometimes called Ifrits, are very powerful, but the Marids are the most powerful and dangerous of all. Dijin are generally believed responsible for illness and mishaps. Magicians have trapped Dijin in various ways. One way was imprisoning them in an old brass lamp. When someone rubs the lamp three times, the Dijini inside will appear, grant three wishes, and obey the one who set it free. Traditionally, it is said that the greatest, great and wise King Solomon shut misbehaving Dijin in lead-stoppered bottles and threw them into the sea. And that's what I've been speculating about. You know, if all those Dijin bottles that were taken out of the Iraq National Museum, I mean, don't you think these crazy fuckers could have very well be, you know, going and getting all these antiquities and opening these things up to release these? I mean, there's no doubt that the more, whether or not you believe in anything spiritual at all, or, you know, it doesn't require any of that. But the fact of the matter is, when you research this stuff, because I don't come from any of that religious background, and I've always been somebody who's been against all of that stuff. But what the problem is that when you are against religion and you think it's all horse shit, it's just, you know, I mean, being an atheist is no more of a threat to the priest class than someone who is a blind follower of any religion such as Christianity, Judaism, Islam, or anything else. Because they still got your mind in a fucking jail cell. You understand? Because you're still locked into a paradigm and you're still looking at things one way. So that's where they've been able to keep all the secrecy in place in this stuff. Because, you know, again, hey, if they get blind followers following their religion and never questioning things, hey, that's great for them. That's best case scenario. But as they have pushed religion, they have, with the same fervor, pushed atheism. And again, atheism does not get you any more closer to the truth than being a blind follower of Christianity or any other religion. But this is a spiritual war. There is a spiritual war that is coming our way very soon. It has been going on forever, but I mean in a big upfront in your face way. And I don't know all the details of that. I don't know how that's come about, but I know for a fact it's going to happen because the information and the research points in that direction. And it does tie in with all of this. See, that's what bothers me so much, in that I'm finding out more and more. All of this, you know, the stuff with the Anunnaki and these, and this ancient, you know, the ancient origins of religion and all this stuff we've been covering here as of late has everything to do with the world system and geopolitical system and everything else. But through this cognitive dissonance that's been created by the power structure with the phony truth movement, the phony research community, the people out there who call themselves awake and truthers and all this stuff are literally being programmed to ignore a big section of this information that would go about explaining all the things they think are important, like the bankers and, you know, the Constitution and all that horse shit. And that is why I have continued and will continue to expose all of these creeps and these infiltrators and these liars who claim to be telling the truth about the world order, but are conveniently leaving out the things that would really give us the ability to be able to fight what this is. Let's see what we have here. We don't have, we just very, very few news stories tonight. I don't think we have very many emails, unless we get more that comes in. Let me see here. MJ says, do you know anything about Jones and that Stratford shill leak scenario? Oh, I talked about that a few weeks ago. That was a total bullshit. Yeah, that was total bullshit. Total. I researched that on my own, didn't find anything that concrete that connected that to it. I'm not saying it's not possible. It's definitely possible. And when you look at the connections that Jones has that I cover in Seek Right 2 to the, you know, these Saudi financiers, Adnan Khashoggi and the rest of this. I mean, it very well could be a possibility, but the fact of the matter is there's no proof to back it up. And it's pure speculation, and I think that those kind of things are oftentimes put out there to muddy the water for things like what I've put out and so other people have worked on and exposed Jones for and the rest of it. So I don't, you know, I don't believe it's in the realm and scope of impossibility. I don't doubt that it could be a possibility that he's somehow connected to the whole Stratford thing. But you know, there, from what I've seen, what I've looked at, there isn't any concrete things connecting to it. There's just a bunch of, you know, sort of subsequent information. So there you go. I hope that helps. Let's see. This one's from Nick. Nick says, I was just watching for shits and giggles. I was watching O'Reilly. Allegedly, there will be a new movie portraying Abe Lincoln as a vampire hunter. Yeah, I heard about that. Who are these vampires? Jesuits? You're awesome, man. Keep up the great work, even though it may seem like I'm out of the loop and not out having a Facebook account. I'm always researching and never miss a single show of yours, Nick Spiro. All right, thanks, Nick. Appreciate that, buddy. Glad you're still listening. Let's see here. This is from Doth Anakim. That can't be your real name, but it's a cool name nonetheless. Yo, Josh, I love your candor. You hit all the applicable points, spirit and science. One of your shining attributes that sets you apart is you aren't afraid to learn. Your paradigm is an ever-emergent one. You aren't so presumptuous or arrogant enough to believe you can do or can know absolutely everything. Or can know absolutely. Another appeal you got, bro, rather don't have, is a stick that annoys me. The point I would like to vocalize, a point you raise and no one else does, maybe Freeman, his hippie ways are hypocritical, but is extremely important to the core of truly seeing the horror behind the truth movement. Once you find out 9/11 was an inside job, there's an NWO, the institutions are rigged, and society and biology are engineered, it raises big questions. Your world becomes more surreal. Once you do, however, if you do, find out the truth movement is an engineered product and you are supposed to find it, it's just too obvious. I don't know why this is perhaps, we aren't as in control of this sea of existence and truth is conspiring against the false. Maybe a being or group has set in motion a chain of events required to force child man into metamorphosis or a return to stasis. A great endeavor that would be, quite a checkmate. E tenebra destino progenovo per aurora et sol correlutions. Don't know what the fuck that means. Sounds like Latin. I pick out destiny. What is this? I don't know. The destiny of the sun is bright near the lens. I don't know what that means. But anyway, nonetheless, good email. Appreciate that. Thanks so much for your kind words there, Doth Vulcan. I'll give you a little Klingon there. Landing in my Klingon bird of prey. Let's see what else we have. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it as far as emails. Not a lot of material tonight here. I'm just going to get through a couple of emails or a couple of news stories we have, and then we'll get into some reading tonight. Netanyahu says Israel won't need U.S. okay to hit Iran. Israeli aircraft and Gaza rocket squads traded strikes across the border on Thursday as Israeli prime minister blamed Iran for the violence. So they don't need, Netanyahu also said, like, right around the 9/11 that, I think it was like 2 weeks after 9/11. It was this quote from Netanyahu where he said, Americans know that Israel controls America, and they also know that there's not anything they can do about it. That's pretty, yeah, that's pretty damning words. So if you don't need ROK to hit Iran, that we don't need, I guess that means we don't have to bail your ass out when you guys get fucking knocked back into the Stone Age. And I think that's the plan anyway. I think the whole thing is, you know, they want to get Israel in this position so they can get, you know, fucked with by the other side, so they have more of an impetus to go after the other side, and we'll see what happens. I mean, all about the landing pad now. It's pretty crazy. CIA Clooney went and reported to Obama at the White House yet again. Always making appearances at the White House. People wonder why. Like, don't you guys see this fucker for what he is? He's a goddamn agent. And he's going to report on the whole Coney thing and get his next marching orders. It's just all there is to it. American ISPs to launch massive copyright spying scheme on July 12th. If you download potentially copyrighted software, videos, or music, your internet service provider has been watching and they're coming for you. Specifically, they're coming for you on Thursday, July 12th. That is the date when the nation's largest ISPs will all voluntarily implement a new anti-piracy plan that will engage network operators in the largest digital spying scheme in history and see some users' bandwidth completely cut off until they sign an agreement saying they will not download copyrighted materials. Word of the start date has been largely kept secret since ISPs announced their plans last June. You know what that means, boys. Go out and get yourself a fucking terabyte drive now while they're cheap and start fucking downloading everything you can. The deal was brokered. It ain't going to stop downloading. I got news for them. They always do one of these things like this every so often. It's not going to stop a goddamn thing. This shit was around long before BitTorrent or LimeWire or Kazaa or any of that Napster or any of that horse shit. We were fucking downloading shit off of news groups years before anybody even knew what fucking downloading movies and stuff was. It's never going to go away. It's just going to go underground like everything else. And these clowns are going to continue to run their scam. I mean, it's such a scam anyway. I talked about this recently on the show, but I just can't get over it. I mean, musicians and artists, that's why do you think they engineered the going from the physical media of, you know, a record or a disc or a tape or something like that to going to digital downloads? Because there was no landscape for this, you had bands and artists who were on record labels and had record deals prior to there being any digital content. And so since that wasn't in their contract at all, the record labels didn't have to pay one single penny in royalties to these artists once they took their music and started selling it online in the digital domain. Then when artists started to renegotiate their deals the next time around, the lawyers for the big record labels already had written into the new contracts that because of the new, you know, digital format, the record labels would recoup 100% profits from digital formats and the artists would recoup only from hard media. Now, how fair is that? I mean, if you sell, you understand, if you sell 1,200, I think it was the Melvins that did that last year. Melvins been around for 30 fucking years. But they sold 1,200 CDs, and that was enough to get them in, like, the Billboard Top 100, like 70 on the charts, because nobody buys physical discs anymore. And so that's what this crackdown thing, they set all of this up as an excuse to be able to gain control over the internet through their already existing copyright laws and everything else, and they use this as a way to be able to essentially literally own and make indentured servants out of all of their performers. You know, I mean, I still see people out there that still think that, you know, you can just start a band and you know, if you're good and you play enough, you'll get signed. That's just not the case, and you shouldn't want that anyway. I mean, I'm telling you right now, you're out of your goddamn mind if you sign a deal with one of these major record labels. You're just crazy. I mean, I'm not saying don't use their own distribution network or whatever you want to get their to get your stuff out. But I mean, listen, you know, the best thing to do with these record labels is to get a development deal. Because if you can get a development deal out of a label, that's money. It's like a grant. That's money you don't have to pay back. They'll give you, you know, $250,000 for a development deal. And what they expect you to do with that is get pro equipment and go record, you know, a record or a demo in a, you know, totally top of the line studio. But what the smart people do is, because no matter how much you spend on your recording, what happens is when people get development deals, they go and spend all $250,000 on equipment and, you know, the most amazing studio they can get their hands on. But then they have to end up going and record the record all over again for the label if the label decides they want to pick that artist up. And if they don't, then, you know, boom, that's it. But see, what a lot of bands have done is when they get a development deal, instead of spending all that money on studio time, you take that 250 grand, you go and buy you all the gear you need, a van and a trailer so you can run your own tour, buy yourself a silk screening machine so you can do your own t-shirts, get yourself a tower burner so you can burn like, you know, 10 or 20 CDs at a time or 10 DVDs at a time, and buy yourself, you know, if you've got a place you can put a studio in your house or a place where you can get one, hey, take that money and build yourself a badass home studio, which you can do with about that much money now. And then record your, get somebody who knows what they're doing, get a pro engineer and a pro producer, and then record your demo, take that to them. If they don't like that and don't want to pick you up on the basis of that, boom, guess what? You now have a van and a trailer and badass gear and a home studio with money from a major record label you don't have to pay back. And let me tell you something, they're a lot more willing to give development deals, even in this day and age, than they are record deals. And that's the way you got to go. You got to find out the ways around these guys' systems. And luckily for me, I've been a musician so long and been involved in the industry so long that combined with my research and my knowledge into this stuff, you know, I can tell you what not to do and what to do when it comes to this stuff, but it's all pay for play now. I mean, the only thing that separates you from getting your music on the radio is money. When we were doing the Demigods thing, I got an email from one of the biggest radio promoter guy gets everybody on the radio, and he told us he could get our song played, a song of ours played once on every major radio station in the United States, Clear Channel stations and everything, $5,000 up front for one play. You want two plays? $10,000. And that's not even a guarantee. That's even going to do. It's even going to help you. But that's what it is. It's all pay for play, and all of this crackdown is a way for them to not only control and regulate the internet, but to also milk and sponge more money off of artists' content that they've created that otherwise they're losing. They wouldn't, you know, if they had to give their artists 50% of the digital sales, you wouldn't be hearing a goddamn thing about copyright infringement and downloading and BitTorrent. You wouldn't be hearing a goddamn thing about it. But because 100% of that money goes into the hands of these fat cat motherfuckers running these record labels that are, I mean, I'll tell you, they're all Jews at the top. That's a fact of the matter. But they're just, you know, they're middle management for the priest class itself. But the music industry itself is totally controlled by Rome and the mob. It always has been. But that's the whole deal. What all of this is about, all this copyright stuff and downloading and all this, it's about the fact that these fat cats are taking 100% of the profit of all artist rights. And again, if they were having to give half of that up to the artists, you wouldn't be hearing hide their hair about this. Oh, it's just insane. Turns out no one saw it coming. Skeptics rebuff controversial experiment that proves psychic ability is real. It was a miraculous experiment that appeared to prove that people do possess psychic ability. Memory tests carried out by Daryl Byrne in 2010 proved that we have the ability to predict the future by picking out certain words, but now other scientists have tried to replicate the results and found nothing. The Cornell University academic published a paper which claims subjects show a list of words could better recall the ones that they would later be shown again, but before they actually knew which words made up the second list, the apparently rigorous exam seemed to prove that participants could see into the future and pick out the words they would soon come across. The report was published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology and sparked outrage among many psychologists who could not believe the results. Now, University of Hertfordshire psychologist Richard Wiseman and University of London psychologist Christopher French both conducted the rebuttal experiment using a group of 50 people. Explaining his skepticism in the original study, Wiseman told Live Science, it's almost as if you study for an exam, you do the exam and then you study for it afterwards and then you get a better mark. Why are they all of a sudden trying to prove or disprove whether or not psychic ability is real? The government has known for years that psychic ability is real. They have been using psychic ability in years. I mean, Montauk and all that stuff. There's declassified stuff all up and down the boards. They've been doing, stuff with psychics for years and years and years, 100 years. And now they're trying to actively disprove that. That lets you know they're actually using more of this mind war stuff and more of this, psychic attack stuff in this day and age right now. Man, I can't believe there's just nothing to talk about today. I mean, have we really scooped this low? X-Files star Gillian Anderson is the latest celeb to come out as bisexual. I mean, who cares? Why do we care? Why does it matter? I mean, I knew when I was watching X-Files back in the 90s, she was a panani licker because she was, she was a single mom that got impregnated, and I mean, who cares though? Really, that's all there is to cover. Gillian Anderson from the X-Files is bisexual. Great. Who cares? Why does it matter? I don't care if you smoke pole or lick pussy or whatever. I mean, we got shit to deal with here. Let's deal with it. Worry about who's licking whose pussy or who's eating whose cock or whatever. Worry about that shit later. Jesus. Out of fucking control. Let's see. Have I heard about this? Geithner arrested, 116 major bank resignations. No, I haven't heard about that. No, I haven't seen anything in any major news about that, so I'd be skeptical of it. Maybe it's true. I don't know. I hadn't seen nothing in major news, and I looked at everything. So, there's just not a whole lot of anything to cover. I guess we're going to get into, just go ahead and get into end of days here for you tonight. My website for this broadcast originates from theglobalreality.com with the Chivin banner and, the donate button there to support our work. We don't have commercials. We don't have ads, banner ads, but that's how you help us out. So thanks to everybody who has helped us out. We'll take a break, come back, and get into the end of days. This is The Global Reality. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
plastic watering can for a fake Chinese rubber plant and a fake plastic girl. What you bought from a
no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
All right, back here with you in the Global Reality, right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us tonight. And, it's one of those slow days. So I figured, you know, I mean, it happens like that sometimes. I mean, sometimes you're just, you know, there's not a lot to cover. And with what I'm doing right now, I'm working on the rock wall stuff. So, you know, I do come up here and give you updates on that. But then there's other stuff, you know, I got to keep some of the stuff for the film. You know, I don't want to give away all the information and there's nothing for when the film is done. But, yeah, I mean, this was just kind of one of those days, though, when I wanted to do a show and wanted to be live, but there just wasn't a lot. So I figured, hey, I'd get up here and wing it. And if it's a shorter show, it's a shorter show. But either way, we thank you for being with us here tonight. TheGlobalReality.com is my website. My email address is GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. We're going to be getting into the end of day, Zachariah Sitchin. We're almost at the end of this book, actually. We'll be moving on to other series of reading after this one. So let's continue on here now tonight. Studying every prophecy and every prophetic utterance, the devout in Jerusalem found repeated references to David as God's anointed and a divine vow that it will be his seed by a descendant of the house of David that his throne shall be established again in Jerusalem in days that are to come. Now, that's, you know, if that's not a reference to bloodlines and the importance of why the elite to this day put so much importance on the bloodlines and the interbreeding and keeping the bloodline in check. I mean, I don't know what is. That's, I mean, that is about as in your face as it gets. A divine vow that it will be the seed of David, a descendant of the house of David. Well, you look no need look any further than all religions. I mean, you've got like the Levites and all that stuff. I mean, they were in those that same bloodline. All the people that set up. I mean, you have like Brigham Young and Joseph Smith and their ties to Freemasonry and Freemasonry being or Mormonism being a front to set to practice Freemasonry in secret. Then Charles Taze Russell as well. I mean, that all that bloodline ties back to that. So does all of these creators of these religions. So, I mean, it's just, there's no question that whoever shall establish the throne of David in Jerusalem again will, number one, be somebody that is absolutely a bloodline, and number two, will be somebody who is very much involved in religion, you know, a religious figurehead. So it's, as soon as we see a religious figurehead that is, you know, of the bloodlines start to make your way towards Jerusalem, it's time that we get the fucking, hanging nooses out. I don't know. Maybe it's maybe that's extreme. I don't know. Let's continue on here. It is on the throne of David that future kings who must be of the house of David shall sit in Jerusalem. And when that shall happen, the kings and princes of the earth shall flock to Jerusalem for justice, peace, and the word of God. This God vowed is an everlasting promise, God's covenant for all generations. The universality of this vow is attested to in Isaiah 16:5, and on and on and on and on, all these other verses. I'm not going to read all the fucking numbers and names, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? Sitchin. Oh, fine. Yes, they say that all the time. That's all you have to tell us. These are strong words, unmistakable in their messianic covenant with the house of David, yet they are also full of explosive facets that virtually dictated the course of events in Jerusalem. Linked to that was the matter of the prophet Elijah. Elijah, nicknamed the Thisbite, after the name of his town in the district of Gilead, was a biblical prophet active in the kingdom of Israel after the split from Judea in the 9th century BCE during the reign of King Ahab and his Canaanite wife, Queen Jezebel. True to his Hebrew name, Eli Yahu Yahweh is my God, he was a constant in constant conflict with the priests and spokesman of the Canaanite god Baal, the Lord, whose worship Jezebel was promoting. After a period of seclusion at a hiding place near the Jordan River, where he was ordained to become a man of God, he was given a mantle of hair cloth that held magical powers and was able to perform miracles in the name of God. His first reported miracle was the making of a spoonful of flour and a little cooking oil last a widow as food for the rest of her lifetime. He was then resurrected. He then resurrected her son, who had died of a virulent illness. During a contest with the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel, he would summon a fire from the sky. It was the only biblical instance of an Israelite revisiting Mount Sinai since the Exodus, when he escaped for his life from the wrath of Jezebel and the priests of Baal. An angel of the Lord sheltered him in a cave on Mount Sinai. Of him, the scriptures said that he did not die because he was taken up to heaven in a whirlwind to be with God. His ascent, as described in great detail in Kings 2, chapter 2, was neither a sudden nor an unexpected occurrence. On the contrary, it was a pre-planned and pre-arranged operation whose place and time were communicated to Elijah in advance. The designated place was in the Jordan Valley on the eastern side of the river. When it was time to go there, his disciples, headed by one named Elisha, went along. He made a stop at Gilgal, where Yahweh's miracles were performed for the Israelites under the leadership of Joshua. There he tried to shake off his companions, but they went on to accompany him to Beth-El, though asked to stay put and let Elijah cross the river by himself. They stuck with him until the last stop, Jericho, all the while asking Elisha whether it was true that the Lord will take Elijah heavenward today. Well, they're taking him out to meet a fucking mothership, huh? Oh, yes, will he go heavenward today? We'll see. At the bank of the Jordan River, Elijah rolled his miracle mantle and struck the waters, parting them, enabling him to cross the river. The other disciples stayed behind, but even then Elisha persisted on being with Elijah, crossing over with him. As they continued to walk and to talk, there appeared a chariot of fire with horses of fire, and the two were separated. And Elijah went up to heaven in a whirlwind. And Elisha saw and cried out, my father, the chariot of Israel and its horsemen. And he saw it no more. Archaeological excavations at Tel Gasul, the prophet's mound, a site in Jordan that fits the biblical tale's geography, have uncovered murals that depicted the whirlwinds. It is the only site excavated under the auspices of the Vatican. Well, oh, yeah, go figure. Isn't that fucking funny? So they've got, so in Jordan, they've got murals depicting these whirlwinds, and it was the only site in the Middle East that was, you know, excavated by the Vatican. Yeah, I wonder why. A little too much real info there. Got to send the butt touchers in black out to man the dig. My search for the finds, which covered archaeological museums in Israel and Jordan and included a visit to the site in Jordan, and ultimately led to the Jesuit-run Pontifical Biblical Institute in Jerusalem, is described in the Earth Chronicles expedition. Oh, my goodness. You hear that? So old Zechariah went looking for these murals of the whirlwinds, and lo and behold, he finds out they had been excavated by the Vatican. He goes looking in Israel, can't find anything, goes to Jordan, can't find anything. Then he goes to the site in Jordan, can't find anything. And then the next thing you know, where else do I go and look? Oh, well, the Pontifical Biblical Institute in Jerusalem, ran by Jesuits, they seem to have all the intel on that. Oh, but the Jesuits don't run anything. It's all the Jews, right? Jewish tradition has held that the transfigured Elijah will one day return as a harbinger of final redemption for the people of Israel, a herald of the Messiah. The tradition was already recorded in the 5th century BCE by the prophet Malachi, the last biblical prophet, in his final prophecy. Because tradition held that Mount Sinai cave where the angel took Elijah was where God had revealed himself to Moses, Elijah has been expected to reappear at the start of the Passover festival when the Exodus is commemorated. To this day, the Seder, the ceremonial evening meal when the seven-day Passover holiday begins, requires the placement on the meal table of a wine-filled cup for Elijah to sip from as he arrives. The door is open to enable him to enter, and a prescribed hymn is recited, expressing the hope that he will soon herald the Messiah, son of David. As is the case with Christian kids being told that Santa Claus did sneak down the chimney and bring them the gifts that they see, so are Jewish kids told that though unseen, Elijah did sneak in and take a tiny sip of wine. By custom, Elijah's cup has been embellished to become an artful goblet, a chalice never used for any purpose other than for the Elijah ritual at the Passover meal. The Last Supper of Jesus was that tradition-filled Passover meal. Though retaining the semblance of choosing its own high priest and king, Judea became, for all intents and purposes, a Roman colony ruled first from headquarters in Syria, then by local governors. The Roman governor, called Procurator, made sure that the Jews chose as ethnarch, the head of the Jewish council, to serve as the temple's high priest, and at first also a king of the Jews, not king of Judea as a country, whomever Rome preferred. I love that. We're going to make the king of this person the king of the Jews, and whatever they prefer in Rome, that's what we'll do. See, I mean, the Jews were subservient to Rome even back then. From 36 to 4 BCE, the king was Herod, descendant of Edomite converts to Judaism, who was the choice of two Roman generals of Cleopatra fame, Mark Antony and Octavian. Herod left a legacy of monumental structures, including the enhancement of the Temple Mount and the strategic place come for it fortress of Mazda at the Dead Sea. He also paid heed to the governor's wishes as a de facto vassal of Rome. It was into a Jerusalem enlarged and magnified by Hamotian and Herodian constructs, thronged with pilgrims for the Passover holiday, that Jesus of Nazareth arrived in 33 A.D., At that time, the Jews were allowed to retain only a religious authority, a council of 70 elders called the Sanhedrin. There was no longer a Jewish king, the land no longer a Jewish state, but a Roman province was governed by the procurator Pontius Pilate, ensconced in the Antonia Citadel that adjoined the temple. Tensions between the Jewish populace and the Roman masters of the land were rising and resulted in a series of bloody riots in Jerusalem. Pontius Pilate, arriving in Jerusalem in AD 26, made matters worse by bringing into the city Roman legionnaires with their pole-mounted signet and coinage bearing graven images forbidden in the temple. Jews showing resistance were pitilessly sentenced to crucifixion in such numbers that the place of execution was nicknamed Golgotha, the place of the skulls. Jesus had been to Jerusalem before. His parents went to Jerusalem every year at the Feast of Passover, and when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast, and when they had fulfilled the days as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem. When Jesus arrived with his disciples this time, the situation was certainly not what was expected, not what the biblical prophecies had promised. Devout Jews, as Jesus most certainly was, that's a misnomer. Jesus was not a Jew. He was a Semite. Semitic. Say, Semitic can be Arab, can be Jewish. This whole, connection to this of falsely calling Jesus a Jew and not a Semite, and the false connection with the people who are the true inhabitants of that land, which are the Semitic bloodline. See, that's why they've wanted to wipe out. People can never figure out, well, why, blah, blah, blah. Why are they wanting to wipe out these Jews if they're, if there's Jews or anything? It's because they want to wipe out Semites. And so the Ashkenazis can go in and run the show. That's the whole deal with that. Uh, They were beholden to the idea of redemption and salvation by a Messiah, central to which was the special and everlasting bond between God and the house of David. It was clearly and most emphatically expressed in the magnificent Psalm 89, in which Yahweh, speaking to his faithful followers in a vision, said, hold on, let me get the Yahweh voice going here. I have exalted one chosen out of the people. I have found David, my servant. With my holy oil I have anointed him. He shall call out to me. Thou art my Father, my God, the rock of my salvation. And I, as a firstborn, shall place him supreme of all the kings on earth. My compassion for him forever I will keep. My faithful I shall not betray. My covenant with him will not be violated. What I have uttered I shall not change. I shall make his seed endure forever. His throne shall endure as the days of heaven.
Was not that reference to the days of heaven a clue, a linkage between the coming of a Savior and the prophesied end of days? Was it not the time to see the prophecies come true? And so it was that Jesus of Nazareth, now in Jerusalem with his 12 disciples, determined to take matters into his own hands. If salvation requires an anointed one of the house of David, he, Jesus, would be the one. His very Hebrew name, Yeshua, Joshua, meant Yahweh's Savior. And as for the requirement that the anointed one, Messiah, be of the house of David, that he was. The very opening verse of the New Testament in the Gospel, according to St. Matthew, says, the book of the generations of Jesus Christ and the son of David, the son of Abraham. Then, there, and elsewhere in the New Testament, the genealogy of Jesus is given through the generations. 14 generations from Abraham to David, 14 generations from David to the Babylonian exile, and 14 generations from then to Jesus. He was qualified, the Gospels assured, one and all. Our sources for what happened next are the Gospels and the other books of the New Testament. We know that the eyewitness reports were in fact written long after the events. We know that the codified version is the result of deliberations at a convocation called by the Roman Emperor Constantine 3 centuries earlier. We know that Gnostic manuscripts like the Nag Hammadi documents or the Gospel of Judas give different versions that the church had reason to suppress. Yeah, the Nag Hammadi, that's definitely one to look into. That's actually a magical text, actually, from what I understand, which is an undisputed fact that at first there was a Jerusalem church led by the brother of Jesus aimed exclusively at Jewish followers. That was overtaken, superseded, and eliminated by the Church of Rome that addressed the Gentiles. Yet follow we shall the official version, for it by itself links the Jesus events in Jerusalem to all the previous centuries and millennia as told heretofore in this book. First, any doubt if it still exists that Jesus came to Jerusalem at Passover time and that the Last Supper was the Passover Seder meal must be removed. Matthew 26:2, Mark 14:1, and Luke 22:1 quote Jesus saying to his disciples as they arrived in Jerusalem, ye know that after 2 days is the feast of the Passover. After 2 days was the feast of the Passover of the unleavened bread, and now the feast of the unleavened bread drew near, and it is called the Passover. The three Gospels in the same chapters then state that Jesus told his disciples to go to a certain house where they would be able to celebrate the Passover meal with which the holiday begins. Next to be tackled is the matter of Elijah, the herald of a coming Messiah. Luke 1:17 even quoted the relevant verses in Malachi. According to the Gospels, the people who heard about the miracles that Jesus performed, miracles that were so similar to those by the prophet Elijah, the people at first wondered whether Jesus was Elijah reappeared. Not saying no, Jesus challenged his closest disciples. What say you that I am? And Peter answered and said unto him, thou art the anointed one. If so, he was asked, where is Elijah? Who had to appear first? And Jesus answered, yes, of course, but he has already come. And they asked him, saying, why say the scribes that Elijah must first come first? And he answered and told them, Elias very cometh first and restoreth all things. But I say unto you that Elias has indeed come. This was an audacious statement, the test of which was about to come. For if Elijah has in fact returned to earth, thereby fulfilling the prerequisite for the Messiah's coming, then he had to show up at the Seder and drink from his cup of wine. As custom and tradition required, the cup of Elijah filled with wine was set on the Seder table of Jesus and his disciples. The ceremonial meal is described in Mark chapter 14. Conducting the Seder, Jesus took the unleavened bread, now called matzah. Oh, that's where they got matzah balls from, huh? The balls of Jesus, matzah balls. That's what Jews love. Yes. Tasty. Put them in your mouth and suck them. And made the blessing and broke it and gave pieces of it to his disciples. And he took the cup, and when he had thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. Yeah, they get fucked up like Jerry's kids. Pass that shit over here, Jesus. Oh, yeah, this shit's going to be rough for you tomorrow, buddy. Oh. So without doubt, the cup of Elijah was there, but Da Vinci chose not to show it. In this, the Last Supper painting, which could only be based on the New Testament passages, Jesus is not holding the crucial cup, and nowhere is there a wine cup on the table. Instead, there is an inexplicable gap to the right of Jesus, and the disciple to his right is bending sideways as if to allow someone unseen to come between them. Was the thoroughly theologically correct Da Vinci implying that an unseen Elijah did come through the open windows behind Jesus and took away the cup that was his? Elijah, the painting thereby suggests, did return and herald the proceeding, the anointed king of the house of David did arrive, and thus confirm when he arrested Jesus, was brought before the Roman governor, who asked him, art thou the king of the Jews? And Jesus said unto them, thou sayest the sentence to die on the cross was inevitable. When Jesus raised the cup of wine and made the required blessing, he said to his disciples, according to Mark 14:24, this is my blood of the New Testament. If these were his exact words, he did not mean to say that they were to drink wine turned to blood, a grave transgression of one of the strictest prohibitions of Judaism from the earliest times, for blood is the soul. What he said or meant to say was that the wine in this cup, the cup of Elijah, was a testament, a confirmation of his bloodline. And Da Vinci depicted it convincingly by his disappearance, presumably taken away by the visiting Elijah. The vanished cup has been a favorite subject of authors over the century. The tale becomes legend. The Crusaders sought it. Knights Templar found it. It was brought over to Europe. The cup became a goblet, a chalice. It was the chalice representing the royal blood, the sangreal in French, and becoming sangreal, the Holy Grail, or had it, after all, never left Jerusalem. And from what I understand, the grail is not even actually a cup itself. It's like it's like something that to do with, you know, magical incantations and being able to conjure up demons and everything else as it is. So that's why I think that painting is that way, is because Elijah appeared in, you know, a spirit form there. The continued subjugation and intensified Roman repression of the Jews in Judea led to the outbreak of Rome's most challenging rebellion. It took Rome's greatest generals and best legions 7 years to defeat little Judea and reach Jerusalem. In AD 70, after a prolonged siege and a fierce hand-to-hand battles, the Romans breached the temple's defenses, and the commanding general Titus ordered the temple put to the torch. Though resistance continued elsewhere for another 3 years, the Jewish Great Revolt was over. The triumphant Romans were so jubilant that they commemorated the victory with a series of coins that announced to the world Judea Capita, Judea Captured, and erected a victory archway in Rome depicting the looted temple's ritual objects. But during each year of independence, Jewish coins were struck with the legend Year 1, Year 2, etc., for the freedom of Zion, showing fruits of the land as decorative themes. Inexplicably, the coins of year 2 and 3 bore the image of a chalice. Was the Holy Grail still in Jerusalem? Well, that's the end of chapter 15 there. We're getting real close to being done with this one. And, there you go. More of these questions. I think this is just highly fascinating because getting into any of this stuff and seeing how, our wars and the structure of government, and the structure of oppression, and the structure of enslavement goes back to all of this. And it's just amazing how in every facet of our lives, as people who are, people who are walking around unawake, and all of us at one point were unawake to this stuff. I don't know. I just, from the time I was put into churches, when I went into church when I was a little kid, I just knew they were bad. I knew it was bullshit. I could just smell it. And it's just so amazing that, we're always told the boogeyman is anything but, the people that are running these religions. And that's what we start to find out, is these are the people that are really causing the problems. And it's all because of this restriction of knowledge and this unallowance for us to have the whole truth. Because if we have the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth, and everybody has that truth, you have no need for a power structure or a hierarchy anymore. You level the playing field, and then there's no way anyone can be a slave master over anybody else. So to me, I found out that was the goal and that was what needed to happen. And that's what we need to do years ago. How we go about doing that, I don't know. But I know that we have to continue to dig and have to continue to look for answers and continue to talk about this stuff. Continue to get into the stuff that people tell you not to go there and not to look into. The reason they tell you not to look into this stuff, folks, is because obviously they have a vested interest in protecting the people who are hiding this information from us. And as I've shown you in the Secret Right films, that indeed is the case. TheGlobalReality.com is my website. You can support our work there with the chipping banners, the donate button, the P.O. box. If you absolutely can't use PayPal, that's how you do it. Thank you so much to everybody out there who has supported us. And if you haven't, please do so soon and help out those other people who are keeping us staying alive. My name is Josh Reeves. I love each and every one of you, and we'll see you next time for the show. You guys have yourselves a great one. Take care.